people's group. My name is Kyle, and I am an alcoholic. God, grace, and 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I haven't found it necessary to take a drink or drug today. And that is an absolute miracle. It is an absolute miracle. I just celebrated 17 years of sobriety. It's funny. Yes, it's cool. I had 13 years prior. We'll talk about it a little bit. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, didn't know what the big book was, had no idea about the 12 steps. Total idiot when it comes to all that stuff. But I knew that I stood a fighting chance of not going to prison if I could tell an AA story in front of the judge that I had been to six prior times. So I came into AA for absolutely 100% all the wrong reasons. Expected it to fail because I didn't expect to work it. If you're sitting in a chair tonight and you're wondering, especially the newcomers, welcome to the program that will save your life. If you have the guts to work it the way that it's supposed to be done by the big book, in the big book, by a sponsor. Because left to my own devices, I'm still as weak as I was on day 17, much less year 17. So when you see somebody with time, don't get under the illusion that we're some Svengali, that we understand everything in the world about Alcoholics Anonymous, and we need a little love too, because you're going to find this out. So I'm just going to go ahead and tell you. The longer you stay sober, the skinnier the path gets. Now, you would think the longer that you've done something between repetition that you would broaden your abilities to see the things that you need to do and conquer the fears that you need to conquer, and all of these things will become acceptable. It's the direct opposite. The big book tells me I have to stand on the fighting line. I have to stand on the front line to carry the message of the alcoholic still suffers. Left to my own devices, I will drink again, unless I'm in a firm spiritual condition. And that's a promise in the big book. It's not something that we talk about. But the promise there is that you have to stay active and you have to stay vigil in your own recovery. Fantastic job on sponsorship. Absolutely fantastic. I fell in love with the YPG the first time I walked in here. You guys are at the church. There are people in this room that I adore. People in this room that I've watched get sober. People I've watched become men of integrity and women of trust and faith. All the miracles around me were in here. But the thing that cracked me up the most about YPG is that you're not supposed to be organized. You guys were the most organized, unorganized AA meeting I had ever been to in my life. You walk into the church, there's a table right here. You can scan your money for your basket contribution, or you can buy some literature over there. By the way, we got a 50-50 over here. Throw some money over there. And then you walk over and they got big urns of coffee ready to roll. We got pastries. We got donuts. We got all kinds of stuff going on. And then everything that I saw and everything that I heard inside this group was recovery-based. You'll go to meetings where it's all caught up as far as in the problem. And then it's going to turn into a meeting. We almost had one in my mid. Oh, I forgot. Yeah. I sponsor people. I have a home group. My home group is XYZ32. It's Thursday nights. It's tonight. I came out down here anyway. And it's an AA literature meeting. It's a closed meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I love the literature of AA. But it's not a big book study. It's not a 12 and 12 study. We pick different books. We read them, we talk about them, and then we'll go to the next one. But we'll give those books back out into the system, because if you'll notice, there's limited choice as far as in AA literature that you attend most meetings. We make it available, and we try to keep it free, because that's what saved my life. That's what saved my life. It is deep humility that sits in front of you. Man, I'm telling you. One of my favorite people, Glenn. We got sober together. We sat on the back row at OSG, judged everybody that walked through the room. We knew we were doing it right. They just needed to take our examples and multiply them and everybody'd be great. But the thing about Glenn was he came in, he hook, line, and sinker. He's in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And people would go, Kyle, what does the 12 steps look like? What does the program of Alcoholics Anonymous look like? I said, you follow Glenn for 48 hours. Because the program that he worked was on the soles of his feet. Because he was out there doing the deal. He was buying newcomers' books. He was calling everybody he needed to be called. Callback or no callback, he stayed active in it. And it made it so much easier for me because when I came around this time and I got sober Valentine's Day 17 years ago, September 27, 1987, and I was a broken man, broken in all areas of my life. Still thought I could manage my way out of it. I knew if I had a certain amount of money, it was going to work out a lot better. And story went something along the lines like this. I ran out of money. My coke dealer was a woman, so I got over on her. Took her last stash, stole her car, all the cash in the house, and took off because I knew the next stop was going to be the stop that I could take me anywhere I wanted to go. Lesson here, if you're listening, is that no matter where you go, you are there. As are your problems. They just multiply. So what I did was I got to the Redneck Riviera, and I decided this was a spot. I bought a flea bag hotel for a week, got a job selling cable door to door. This was back before internet. This was cable boxes, and they went like this, or they slid across, and you had 12 channels this way and 12 channels that way for a grand total of 24 channels. And you got your local news. The rest you didn't even recognize. It was Japan. It was all some kind of foreign language. But anyway, I've always been a decent salesperson. So I could go out and I could close enough business to where I could get my draw for the day and afford a 12-pack to a case of beer, a crappy hamburger, and a hotel room that I wanted no part of in about 3 days. But I had nowhere else to go. That's what happens. You're stuck. And so like good old, all good alcoholics, what we do, if you're a man, you run home to mama. You run home to mama. And so I calculated the gas mileage, and I calculated the beer consumption, and I calculated, you know, how much drugs we were going to need to really set this deal on fire. And I drove from Destin, Florida to Dallas, Texas, nonstop. And I had a flat tire as I was pulling into my father's driveway. Now, we're going to get to my father here in a little bit, but he just passed away. He was 94. My mom was 92. She passed away in December. And they were married 75 years. And I used to kid my mom. I'm going, you guys have been together longer than the Rolling Stones. They're getting out there in their 60th year out there touring. And she would tell me to mind my own business. My mother was a lovely person. Taught me all the Southern manners and allowed me to get over on so many people. My father was a third hired by Texas Instruments. If you ever see the movie Brilliant Mind, that's the way my father was. He saw numbers like we saw words. And he was, you know, he had a slide rule and he helped put the first man in the on the moon, and he helped with nuclear devices and submarines with the tracking systems. Back then it was all heat. You had to search out for the heat signal, and they would fly over Arkansas, a little bit of Tennessee and Louisiana, and spot and number the stills that are currently active in those areas. And that's how your military ring basically test on these particular missiles and things. But they were everything that you ever wanted in parents. They didn't fight. They didn't drink. Socially, they were completely accepted. My sister, everything that you could be, she was in high school. You know, president of the social club. She was a pace setter. This, you know, good stuff. And then there was Kyle. And the only reason I got through school was I could shoot. I could make an 18-foot jump shot more times than not. I could talk more trash than any other white guy that we ever played. And I was just fearless when I was on the floor, and I got to be really, really good. I really got to be really, really good. But what happens if you're around me is that I create so much chaos and disappointment that houses have a tendency to have two sides. Outside, the cleavers. Inside, the meat cleavers. So my dad was picking up the sports page every day that basketball season was on. Look what Kyle Andrew did. Look what Kyle Andrew did. Didn't I teach him well? And you would think that would be enough, right? No. I had to do drugs before the game. I had to, you know, I was loaded from the seventh grade to my senior year. And my parents were so convinced that pot was going to be my downfall because they saw a movie, and you're going to age yourself if you know this, Reefer Madness. So they said, Kyle, we don't want you smoking weed. It's okay if you bring beer in your room. I'm like, I'm in. No problem with that. But my mom would find my speed and my little other little accoutrements and a little college refrigerator that I kept in my bedroom. And I would come home and she's cleaning the house like at 200 miles an hour. I go, you got into the bat, didn't you? So I don't know what those are, but you need to get rid of them. And I think that other stuff is marijuana, and we talked about that. Just try to stay alive, Mom. Just try to stay alive. So if you're anything like me, again, I know how to break into my parents' houses. There's no sense in trying to change the locks or anything. I knew how to get in. And I was tired, much like I am tonight, and I apologize for not having much energy. I'm just fighting off some kind of cold or something. And I laid down. So I was going to drive to Dallas, write my mom and dad this serious note that I was a changed man. I was going to clean up my path. And, you know, if you needed me, you go to the county jail, and I'll be in there because I'm going to check myself in as soon as I get through writing this letter. It didn't quite work out that way. I needed a nap. I was exhausted. So I laid on the sofa, and, man, I was out. I probably had been up 3 days straight. And I woke up to this mad-ass woman shaking me like you wouldn't want to shake a baby. I'll put it to you that way. And she is like, you got to get the F out of my house. I've never heard my mother cuss. Your father's on the way home. You know what's going to happen when he hits that door. I want no part of it. It's your fault that we're fighting. I want you out of my effing house. And I'm like, that's not quite what I expected. But you know what? I'm in. I'm going to do that. And then it happened. The back door opens, makes a sound that only the back door makes, and it's time for the Metcalf round of pointing fingers and punching faces. See, my father and I, we grew up throwing hands on one another. I was 6'6", he was 5'11". He was a genius when it came to numbers. I was a genius when I could tell you responses that you could not recover from. It was in that relationship that I learned the fact that physical violence can be, how can I say this? I'm going to say repaired, but it's probably not the right word. But I can hurt you verbally in a manner of which you will carry it to your grave. So words are more hurtful than the fist 100% of the time that I learned about. And here came Dad. So I got up and kind of, you know, limbered up because I knew what was about to happen. It's going to happen real quick. And my father looked at me and he said, Kyle Andrew, it's good to see you. I know you're tired. Why don't you go to the back and take a nap and we'll wake you for dinner? And I'm like, how does this happen? Well, see, God has been working in my life since Destin, Florida. I'm too fucked up to even know it. So you're in recovery right now, even if you're having the worst time of it in your life tonight. God is working in your life, and you can't see it because he's all everything. God, the book tells us he either is or he isn't. He's everything or he's nothing. What's it going to be? What's your choice? God made that choice for me before I hit the first rehab. And if you're willing to look at the inventories that your sponsors are asking you to do, and again, great job, you'll see how he was directing you on the path, even the bad times. Even the bad times. Well, when I was 16 years old, J.J. Pierce High School, upper middle class, all my friends were getting Trans Am and Z28s. There was no reason why I shouldn't have one. My dad reached over and handed me this little case. I'm like, it's going to have keys in it. This is a pretty cool way of, you know, making the presentation, Dad. I like you. And it was a freaking, I opened it up and it's a lawyer's business card. I got a lawyer on retention for my 16th birthday. Pretty cool. You got to think about it for a moment. I was the only one that got that. Because my father was so tired of the Richardson Police Department calling him to come get me. He wanted somebody else to call to have them do what they're going to do and then contact him because he had given up. He was just trying to make it easy on my mom, my sister, and him. So we called the lawyer. He was out. And we're going to see what my options were because, again, some miraculous thing. My mother was my father was my mother. I don't know exactly how it happened. But I ran into a character, and his name was DFW, David Felton Williams. David is no longer with us. My superpower, high-powered attorney was somewhere with his wife. They knew they had me for about 48 hours or I was going to disappear again. I walked into David's office. I tried to take the meeting over. He told me to sit down and shut up. First man that was honest with me. And he said, Kyle, what would you do if I gave you $100? I said, well, my Coke dealer's right down the street. I'd probably go there first, try to get a nice handle on what the day's going to look like. And he looked at my father and he looked at my mother. He goes, we have a problem here. I said, yes, we do. We have a problem. I don't want to turn myself into jail anymore. He goes, you're not a part of this. I'll let you know when I need you to talk. But right now I'm talking to your mother and your father. It, out of the blue skies, this guy starts talking about a treatment center. And I'm like, yeah, baby. That's a lot better than the jail I was about to go to. Again, no, zero. I didn't want to get sober. I needed to buy some time. I needed things to level out. Get it back the way it once was. Find that magic. So they got better. Quebec, Canada, outside of Montreal. I'm like, I'm getting out of the country. By the way, they do license checks as you cross there. It's strictly numeric. And if they would have called, I had four or five felonies out. They wouldn't have let me in their country. Somehow I got through. And they don't take wet drunks. I got hammered because I knew there wasn't going to be any happy hours at this place. And these poor people had to get on the white druggy buggy with an obnoxious guy from Texas who is hammered, who in the previous hour had told the people at the bar that my last name was May and my brother just won the Masters. Now, how sad do you have to be to create an identity at a bar because you know that if you say Kyle Metcalf, there's just not enough panaz in it? See, that's what I lived for. I lived for that magic moment. And I was willing to pay any price to get it. Any price to get it. Got to the place called the Pavilion. Got to the Pavilion. And this little mousy guy comes up. I know you. I said, of course you do. I'm Kyle. Everybody knows Kyle. He goes, nope. I know you because I talked to David Williams. And he told me I'm going to be your sponsor. And that's how I got my first sponsor. I was assigned my sponsors. I never really had the privilege of asking. And Philip Warren lovingly took me through the steps and told me one thing, and it was our first agreement. He said, I'm going to love you enough, Kyle, to tell you the truth. And the truth was something so foreign to me. I didn't know how not to embellish. I didn't know how to be truthful. I didn't know how to be trustworthy. I didn't know what a man of integrity did. And little by slow, this mousy guy spent 30 days with me because he had problems with the wife. He had the dreaded, he should have been in Al-Anon, you know, but he was in the wrong room, and we got together and did our deal. His brother hired me, put me in a situation. You ever had, this is the greatest job interview of all times, where you have to sit down in front of the guy. He goes, yeah, I'd love it. When would you start? And I'm going, well, we really need to talk of when I'm going to leave. He said, what? And I'm like, yeah, dude, I'm on my way to prison. So we played the game as long as we could. And Philip got me through the 12 steps, and it was time to go to court and get this deal taken care of. Okay, and this is where it's the miracles that you have are never in the spot that they are, and they never have speckles and dangles and dallies on it. It's all from hard work, getting dirty, working through a situation with your honesty and integrity intact, that then and only then can you see your part in anything at all that you had done up to that time. Anything. So we were going to turn myself in. We turned myself in, and this is where Alcoholics Anonymous really started to show me what you people were about. His brother's company, 90% of the people were in recovery. And they welcomed me in like a family member. I worked for Mike for about 90 days, and then I had to go to court. We tried to plead around Christmas. And yes, the judge's name was Judge Metcalf, my name. He had seen me so many times prior. If you ever get the toothbrush talk, they mean it. And that's when they say, if I see you in this again, bring your toothbrush because I ain't sending you home. And I sat in front of him. And I actually, blood pressure goes down when I go to jail. And I know how to be in court. I know how to put my fist right here and push it and lean back, look the judge in the eye. Because the decision was made the night before. See, I got to turn my will and my life over to the care of God the night before. There was nothing anybody that was going to say. 27 people from Mike's organization came to my court date. And you know what they told him? He's the treasurer of his home group. All these people are in recovery. And they said, so finally after the third guy, Philip got up, said his piece. Mike got up, said his piece. My attorney got up, said his piece. He goes, I'm just going to stipulate that everybody here is to help Kyle. Is that okay? My attorney's saying, yeah, let's go for it. So approach the bench, and he looks at me. He goes, Kyle, I've never seen you look better. Kyle, I've never seen you with support. Funniest thing about AA. I said, what's that? He goes, they'll be there for you when you get out. 3 years, Texas Department of Corrections. Now, if you've been to county jail, it's actually worse. But prison, you're with the real inmates. These guys don't hesitate. You're surrounded by people totally alone. And after he hit that and said 3 years, Texas Department of Corrections, there's a magical word that you need to have him say that's probated. So I'm like leaning in, probated. And he starts reading the next case number, and I knew I'd had it. I was in possession of Texas Department of Corrections for 3 years. Nothing I could do about it. Powerlessness, as mentioned in step one. So Philip took me through the steps to prepare me for something he had never been to based on his experience with his sponsor. And that's how sponsorship really, really works. I will never be able to see my recovery. I will always be able to see yours. Because yours is the one that I really need to believe in, because left to my own devices, that time will hit that without sufficient force, I will take that drink again. And to drink is to die. Well, inmates have really funny ways of spending their time after they've caught the chain. I was on the last one. I'm in a cell about the size of this little section right here. And they had stuffed their lunches in the toilets and overflowed the toilets. And there was fecal matter floating because it was a little step about an inch into the cell. I was the only one in there. And I crawled up on the little, you know, concrete bench, waiting for him to come get me. And the strangest thing happened was, as I remembered that when we went over step three, I wasn't going to be in charge of this life either. So he told me step three was lives. I had to learn how to do my financial life. I had to learn how to do my family life. I needed to do how to be a worker. I needed to understand what it was like to be in an honest relationship with another man. Who would think, after all the crap we pulled, that our finding of a man to be intimate with is the answer? Because there's just no cheating there. And if you think there is, you might want to look for another sponsor. You know what the most important thing a sponsor